You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt, and on this episode, a conversation with Bonnie Milligan, who, interestingly, plays a pivotal role in my own New York City origin story, which you'll hear all about shortly. This was recorded in early November 2022, while Bonnie was in the middle of preview performances for the musical Kimberly Akimbo on Broadway. We talk about grief and faith and friendship and Victoria Clark and what the past 3 years have taught Bonnie. I'm grateful that the podcast gave us an excuse to catch up and dive deep. And now, here is Bonnie Milligan. Okay, before we dive into everything, I have a story to tell you that I don't know. I'm not telling you the story. It's not a quiz. I'm not asking you to remember, but I have to tell you a story.
Okay.
So in 2014, I just moved to the city and I was like, I need to do something. I can't just sit around waiting for auditions. I need to be somewhat busy and I want to be involved in the quote unquote industry. So I got an internship at 54 Below working for Jen Tepper as their programming intern. That summer, Bonnie Milligan, you did a concert at 54 Below.
Yes, I did, my first ever.
Michael Gioia was a participant in that concert. He helped hand out Girl Scout cookies, yes. if I remember correctly.
And helped bake them, yeah.
Oh, you baked the cookies. Oh, they were like Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, they were made cookies.
Great.
Yeah.
So that night, I met Michael Gioia. And 6 months later, Michael had seen something, a video that I had made on my own. He brought it to Blake Ross, who used to be the editor-in-chief at Playbill. Blake then was like, you should come work for Playbill. And then that was the beginning of everything for me. So
the
truth is, you are the reason.
I'm the reason.
For all of it. Oh, the good,
That's
the bad,
so
and the ugly.
Cool.
But I was thinking about that last night. I was like, wow, I have to tell her that it all started with Michael Gioia handing out Girl Scout cookies at your concert.
Is so amazing. And I just recently spoke with Michael Gioia for People magazine. And we were like, look how far we've come, babe. Wow. Amazing. That's amazing.
That I didn't know that was your first 54 Below show.
That was my first solo show anywhere in the city.
Whoa. Yeah.
It was the year I had done so many different concerts at 54 Below, guested and all these different things.
Right.
That Jen Tepper and Dylan Bustamante were like, you have to do your own show before I was about to leave for the Kinky Boots tour. And they asked me literally a month before.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, which was really scary to throw together a show in a month. Now I've since done it in a week. So, you're like, I don't know what to do. So that's always going to be the most special show ever.
But how long had you been in the city at that point? Cause you had been, like you said, you were singing in people's concerts.
Yeah. I mean, I had been around for a few years. When I first got here, I definitely I've talked about losing myself a little bit, and I wasn't really, I feel like, in the industry or pounding the pavement the way I had originally imagined when I moved here. And then I got into some therapy and helped sort of rediscover confidence in myself. So I feel like I really started hitting the scene in 2012 when I did my first production at the Flea Theater down in Tribeca.
Yeah.
And that's when I started making connections. That's actually where I met Adam Guan, who the very first 54 Below concert I was ever a part of was his first solo show there in 2013.
Oh my God.
And then
God.
It just built up from there. I started meeting people and getting a part of the concert scene, and then started doing workshops and readings and finally getting in on some auditions that I used to get typed out of.
Right.
You know?
Did you feel like even as you were, I don't want to say getting momentum, but doing the concerts and then you're doing your solo show. I'm curious what the feeling was in terms of feeling accomplished and feeling I'm doing the thing, but also you hadn't booked the Kinky Tour yet, and you right. obviously hadn't done a Broadway show yet. So like, did you still feel like you were on the outside?
I did feel on the outside, I guess, of like the Broadway industry. What I felt like the first community I felt kind of accept me and become a part of were writers within new musical theater writers who saw me in little things here and there and started asking me to sing their work. And I did a lot of those like compilation concerts where, you know, right. Jen Tepper produced a lot of those where it would be an evening of, or they'd pick a theme and it would be many composers. And maybe I'd sing in one of those. So the rest of the composers there that night heard me and then would get my contact info. And then I'd start working with them that way. So that's truly kind of like how the networking of me meeting new writers was. And new work is a big passion of mine. I went to the Ohio State University and they have a big you have to add the.
Yeah, always.
a big focus on their program is new work.
Oh.
So I write as well. I developed as a writer and it's a passionate thing for me to be in the room and to watch the process and to be a part of the process. And so that's kind of how I started making connections within the industry. And then I started feeling a part of the community in that way.
So that was satisfying, I imagine, then, to be a part of all that new stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that, you know, those concerts for up and coming writers, they don't have a lot of money. And I did it for free and I did it for the love of it. And, it was amazing because I made so many connections and, you know, my heart grew.
Yeah, of course.
I got to do something really love doing.
And you don't know, you know, I mean, that's sort of the gamble with new work. It's like, you don't know who will see this thing or what that could lead to or what project this person's working on. That was one of the things that I feel like I learned early on about auditioning was like, even if you don't get that job, like you're getting in the room for somebody and you don't know what else they're working on now or in 5 years from now when they're like, oh yeah, remember that person that we saw? You just don't know.
You have no idea. Like even it's so funny. I was recently, purging things. I save everything. And I was like, okay, you need to, you know, clean out some things. I'm a big person on words mean a lot to me. So I save cards and I save letters and I save all these things. And I found I did Gigantic off Broadway back in 2015. And back when it was originally called Fat Camp, they were first going to be bringing it around. And I auditioned and I didn't realize, I'd actually emailed my dad about it. I had auditioned 5 different times to come in as like in the ensemble and to cover, and I didn't get it. And I just saw this email to him being like, I don't know. I felt they were so encouraging. It, you know, it's upsetting, but I understand. And it was just this interesting thing that like days before I had just found my opening night cards from the writing team talking to me about how they were so glad it finally worked out and how much fun it was. And it was like, it was within days of each other. I found that email and these cards about something I had gone in for. And years later, it was like, now we can maybe bring her back in. And it's even something like that. You know what I mean? It was the same project that 5 times it wasn't right. And then years later, they're like, now it is.
Now it is.
Let alone those concerts where somebody's there. Like, I was doing that show at the Flea Theater. And that's how I got my agent. A casting director was there, Andrew Femenella. They have their own agency now, but they were working at Telsey at the time. And they said, you're non-equity and you don't have an agent. I think I want to help you. And they brought me into Telsey like on a Sunday, on a day off. And their boyfriend at the time played for me and I sang a few songs. They put it on tape and submitted me to agencies. That's how I got my agent, was because a casting director was at the show that knew I was not getting paid and I was non-equity and had no agent. And it was because of the connection I made doing something that, again, you're not getting paid for, but you get to do your work.
Yeah.
And I found so much of like my career in this business has been about the connections I've made with people as opposed to like going into a room as a stranger and auditioning.
I think that's important too. And I also want to say that's also a reflection of you. Like that's a reflection of your kindness and your generosity. You know what I mean? Because like that, if you were a nasty person, those people would not feel inclined.
They wouldn't want help.
That's what I'm saying. That's true. So you know, like that is a reflection of like what you put out, you know, and that's not to say that like there's any guarantees, but
right,
when you show up with kindness and you show up with love, you know, and excitement and joy, it's sort of like, you know, sky's the limit. You just don't know.
I feel like Oprah has some kind of quote.
I'm sure
like,
she does.
When preparedness meets opportunity, like you need to show up, you need to have done your work and be ready for anything. But also I think adding into that, a big thing that my parents always instilled in me growing up was kindness to others and maintaining a humble quality, knowing that the work can always deepen, you can always learn from others, and you're not above anything. So just be pleasant to be around and people will want to be around you.
So let me ask you a question then, like, how do you balance, and I really mean you, like, how do you balance that humility with like confidence? Because I feel like both of those are necessary in like knowing your worth, right? Being like, no, this is what I can do. This is who I am. This is what I bring to the room. But also being like, but I'm a student and I'm like I'm open, right?
Yeah. I think honestly, it comes from my deep, deep love of musical theater that this-
You're like a theater nerd. You're like a musical theater nerd.
I'm a theater nerd.
Yeah.
And growing up in a trailer in the Midwest, you know, with family that we didn't have much money and going and getting cast albums at Barnes and Noble.
Always.
That's what we used to do. And learning about the show within the liner notes, to know, oh, that's the plot. And loving musical theater so much that I truly still have that sense of wonder within me that anytime I got to be in a room with heroes of mine, and I've been so lucky to have really worked with many heroes of mine. And some of these icons that I have looked up to for years and years, I now call friends, will never not humble me. I think it's so beautiful. I think so many times in many industries, but it's hard to break through when you don't have money and resources behind you to give you a step up in life, or parents or people in the industry, again, any industry, they'll be like, you know, here's $1 million, go start a business, or here, meet my friend who's directing a thing, you want to be in it because you're my kid,
right?
Stuff like that. To not have that is a harder start, but then to now be able to be in the rooms and get to be a part of this really loving, beautiful community who have embraced me so wholly, really, it does humble me, because I will never, I think, be able to forget that kid who didn't have much, who just dreamed of so much. And to work really hard to say, I deserve to be here. I think there were some years that I didn't know and fully believe that there felt like the imposter syndrome of it all, you know, because I didn't have the other stuff that others do, that you're like, no, I've worked really hard. I've trained really hard. And I continue to work really hard, that you deserve your spot here. And it's okay to feel good about that, but to not get in over your head about it. I don't know.
Right.
That's something as like a young kid, I think, was always instilled in me with my parents, to be nice and humble and hardworking. So that's just still in there. And I hope I never let go of that, because I like realizing what I have and being very grateful.
Yeah. Like maintaining that sense of awe, I think it's like that you said, it's so well said and so important. And honoring that little girl that's inside you that like still is like, oh my God, like this is,
I get to do this.
I get paid
to do this.
So then I guess the question is, you know, when you're in the run, you've gotten to do a lot of things. But in a sort of more extended run, or when you saw the reality, right? Because I think this is always so interesting when I talk to people who, because I'm like this, people who were like fans of musical theater and dreamed of quote unquote Broadway as a kid.
Yeah.
I'm always curious to know, like, what was the experience like when that, like, you finally broke that barrier, you know, like when Head Over Heels finally happened.
Right.
And the reality of doing 8 shows a week.
Uh-huh.
And all of that, like, all of that real stuff starts to happen.
Yes.
How did that land for you? You know, like, what was that like?
I mean, it's a very intense, Head Over Heels, I guess we can talk about that specifically. At first was, you know, the first sort of breaking of the bubble of like the fantasy of it all and what it actually is to be inside of it.
Yeah.
That realizing we're not robots, we are human beings and we can do what we can do. And 8 shows a week is really hard. And especially when you're in tech and in previews and you're at the theater, you know, like Tuesday, I left my house at 12:45 to get to the theater and I got home at 11:30 PM.
Yeah.
And it's just a long day to be out and to be gone and to be thinking about, you know, clearly you have dinner breaks and stuff in there. But it's just, it's a lot. And to also not take it for granted, because you're like, this is all I've ever wanted.
Right.
When you're walking through Times Square and you're like, ugh, Times Square. I remember I used to have to really walk, you know, because I get off the one train to walk. Head Over Heels was at the Hudson. So it's on the east side of, you know, Times Square. I would really have to walk through it. And sometimes I would say out loud to myself as I was walking, this is all you've ever dreamed of. This is all you've ever dreamed of. This is all you've ever dreamed of. Because I would get such like walking, like road rage for walkers, because I'm like, oh God, get me through. But it's a rude awakening to realize how exhausted your body gets, how your mind gets. This now is a whole other level of COVID, the constant sort of mental. And I honestly feel when we first did this Kimberly Akimbo at the Atlantic, it was really during the Omicron surge, and we had just come off like 2 years of like, not really 2 years, but like a year and a half of like everything shut down and everything's gone away. And so many of us are like, this may never come back. And you finally are like, oh, we're coming back. And then people are getting it again. And you're like, oh my gosh. So the mental anguish daily of taking those tests and being like, please don't be positive. Mm. Please let me go to work today. Oh God, was another taxing, scary thing, because we just come back now. Of course, we still test. I feel a little less like, I say, watch, I get COVID tomorrow, but, you know what I mean? But it's scary. It's a level of taking care of yourself I never do when I'm not in a show. It's funny now that I'm in Head Over Heels and now I take so many vitamins.
Right, you're like doing the thing.
Such good care of myself. Like I do not drink. I go to sleep. Well, I try to sleep. I try to drink as much water as possible. And I have less of a social life, because I choose to, and I choose to try to be at my top to perform. Because usually the roles I'm performing are a little difficult.
Yeah, somewhat demanding.
I have to like keep a certain vocal health and physical, emotional health about it all. So it's a lot different than like the glitz and glam you kind of dream of. But then there's also beauty in getting to live the dream. And during Head Over Heels, back when stage doors were, you know, really available and they're hard. We're not really supposed to do them now because of COVID and you should really keep your distance, but getting to meet fans and getting to see people that like represent really what I was as a kid.
Right.
To me is a beautiful full circle feeling. And so it's both, it's like the hardest thing you've ever done and the most beautiful. it's really all the feelings in one. But it's completely different
than what you expected.
Than what you imagine. It's just so much harder. And no matter where I'm coming at in life, maybe something personal has happened, or emotionally you're going through something, or maybe your knee is kind of hurt or your back or whatever, but showing up and giving everything you've got, I think is also a beautiful testament to people who love this art form. And I see that happen with every single member of my cast members in Kimberly Kimbo.
They're giving it.
Everybody is giving all they've got and loving it.
And would you say they're giving 100% or 75%? I'm just curious. For my own curiosity, would you say they're giving 100 or something more? Like
full out.
Full
out.
And
you can go from there.
Go from there. Yeah. I just had a very interesting conversation with Lena Hall about this and about showing up as you are day to day, and 100%, at least for me, meaning like I'm showing up fully today where I am.
Yes.
And I'm gonna be present in whatever this is today.
Yes. And it varies because we're human beings.
Of course.
But I'm gonna say, to watch Victoria Clark, who, you know, it's publicized, we can say she's 63 years old, donning this outfit, and she disappears. I look at her as my niece. I really think of her as a teenager niece that I love. And she barely leaves the stage. She has worked so hard on how she approaches her vocals so she can kind of sound younger. And even though she wants to unleash full Piazza, right. You know what I mean? That like,
and we do, we're like, please.
Oh God, give me it all day long. And she gives you some touches of it, but like to watch this woman, really, she's one of the most generous scene partners I've ever had. And I truly, all of my scenes are with her. That she's always with me. Those eyes are alive. She is there. And every single one of my co-stars, truly, it's one of the most incredible casts I've ever been a part of in so many Broadway debuts, but everyone is just responding. It just feels alive. And I know we're like early on, like talk to me in willing, but 3 years, we're still there.
But you know what? But I think that's important though, Bonnie, because yeah. I think it's important to highlight that like, where the conversation we're having right now is happening in this moment, right?
Yes.
You haven't opened yet. You've just locked your show. You don't have rehearsal today. Like, that is the reality of this moment. And so I think acknowledging that and like finding the awe and the joy and the beauty in what this is right now, I think is like, my heart is very full hearing that because this is a fun moment to be in.
It's so beautiful. It's so fun. It's so amazing to be a part of all these debuts. The first preview, I came upstairs and Vicky and I were both bursted into sobbing tears, literally just because we were so proud of, I mean, they're, you know, young adults, but we call them our kids because they are so amazing and I'm so proud of them. And we were both crying and hugging everybody as they came up the stairs just because we got to be a part of their history forever. Mm. And that is the literal like feeling of the theater, which is what's so beautiful. I think that like, I'm more excited about everybody else around me and that I get to be a part of it than anything that's like, oh, just me. It's not that at all. And that's everybody on that stage. And I think that's why people are walking away feeling this like beautiful desire of connection and doing something with your life. And this uplifting tone is because we just lift each other up the whole time.
In the company. And is that currently, right? Because we're talking about this moment. Is that like the vibe backstage too? Like, has it been that like across the board?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Like we, ever since the Atlantic, then there's only 9 of us in the show. We gather together and we kind of do a little mini warm up. We say, let's do eyes. And we all look at each other in the eye and we kind of just gather before every show. And we still do it now. Everybody comes down around my dressing room and we sit and make eyes and we just say, okay, we're about to do this thing. We get to do this thing today.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Did you anticipate that it would come, that you guys would come in? Did you like?
Honestly, no.
Honestly, no?
Honestly, because there, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. It was not on my radar. So much had happened, you know, the pandemic, my dad had just died when they asked for my audition tape. And then I was finally able to make one after a while. I got the show and they're like, it's going to be this summer. And I'm like, I don't know. And then it kept getting pushed back. That was 2020. Right. And so when we finally got the note that we're actually going to start rehearsals this September last year, I thought, oh, I do have a job. Okay, sure. And you just show up and you think, oh my gosh, I get to be in a room again and collaborate. That's what I love so much about theater, is it's so collaborative.
Yeah.
And we had just spent over a year on Zoom. Well, here we are on Zoom, but on, like, I did a couple of Zoom readings.
Yeah.
And it's so, that the loneliest part would be like, okay, let's all take a five. And I would turn my camera off, mute it, and go get water in the kitchen. And I'm like, this is usually when you start talking to people. This is when you meet people. When, you know, I do a ton of readings, and that's when you like make new friends. There's some people that I feel like are set. I'm like, have you worked with them? Oh, I've done like three readings with her, but never an actual show, but it's felt like we got to know each other.
But I know her, right?
Those break times.
Yeah.
And so when you're just on a camera on Zoom, we don't get that. And so I was just so thrilled to be in a room again and truly to be sharing a stage with all those people. But honestly, Victoria Clark, I've just loved for so long, and her voice is one I know well from either an album or a YouTube clip. And to then become friends and colleagues, and she's just such a generous scene partner that it feels fresh and new every time we do these scenes that we've now done so many times. Because she's so alive, she's so in it, that it has been like the thrill of a lifetime. And people are like, how did you not know you were going to Broadway? I was like, I was just happy to be doing what I was doing. Like the people in that room and at the Atlantic Theater was a theater I've always wanted to work for. I've seen so many shows there that I just was feeling grateful in the moment. And I think that's something that's kind of a message of our show. Like, nobody gets a second time around, and it's like, do what you can now and be in this moment and appreciate what you have when you have it. And that's honestly what I was doing. So by the time we got the announcement that Broadway was going to happen, which was, we were told by David Stone around early January, but you know, the secret, it was a secret for a while. Right. By the time that happened, there were murmurings like, do you think we're going to transfer? People really like, I think we might transfer. So by the time he told us, it was like, oh my gosh, it is happening. Yay. But it wasn't something I was originally thinking. No.
Yeah.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm curious to know what the experience of finding out you're going to Broadway, doing the show. How is it feeling without your dad?
It's crazy to be doing a piece. You know, our show isn't about dying. Our show is really funny. You know, I've said everything else it's really about. But at the center of it is someone who has a certain life expectancy on this fictional disease that she has. And I just spent so much time in a hospital with someone in his final days and having the hard conversations and the final moments of it all. You know, I grew up singing because of my dad, and I will get emotional now. He was, I think he always wanted to be a singer. And then he became a pastor and he started doing Southern gospel groups. He was always a part of quartets and stuff like that. So he sang my whole life. And when I started singing, it was as soon as I could talk, and I was singing in front of church. And I think, and he was always so funny. And I am doing both of those things on a Broadway stage. I'm getting to be super funny and sing my heart out. And every time I sang, people would say, "You sing like your dad." And so I remember it was like mid rehearsal of The Atlantic when I kind of realized what we were doing and some of the scenes. And I thought, oh my gosh, somehow a part of me had blocked out that realization. And I had to leave the room and go cry in a bathroom stall for about 5 minutes. And the team was really supportive. They all knew where I was coming from. And I came back in and, you know, it's just honoring the parts of him that are me, that I take into every show, I mean, the things I'm saying and doing are not exactly a pastor's message, but the making people laugh and hopefully fall in love with you a little bit, and singing with everything. He had a gift, and I hope I honor that. And I have, you know, pictures of him in my dressing room and memories of that. One of the last nights that I had in the hospital, my brother was with me. We did about 30 minutes of singing together. And we just sang through a bunch of hymns and did like we used to do when we were kids. And I have a picture of us from that night in my dressing room, just to kind of remember the joy that can be around something that can feel really hard, and letting people go and still finding the joy while they're here. And I also have pictures of, I have an amazing stepdad and mom and brother who have been so supportive and have come out and, you know, seen and everything I'm in and done everything, that they're very much a part of that. And so I feel like I bring my family with me everywhere, but I have been thinking a lot about him. And November is pancreatic cancer awareness month, and that's what he had. So it's kind of a weird time that we're opening this Broadway show during
not
that
so
month.
not and, so weird, not so not, you know, yeah. not a coincidence.
Yeah, so it's something that's very on my heart and thoughts. Yeah, for sure.
Are you still religious or spiritual at all?
I'm definitely, I feel like more, spiritual. I don't necessarily go to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
I still believe in God and have those feelings and faith. And I really like, if we go back to actually that guy, Jesus, what he did was super loving and caring. And, I think that's where my deep seated feeling for kindness and for reaching out to people who need it and to looking out for others and, you know, the sort of original idea of it all that some super religious organizations are the opposite of.
Yes.
Is how I feel. And I watched my parents be that way, be so kind and loving and do all they could for others, even though they had little. And so I feel like I had a great example of what real Christianity was. So that is how I feel my belief system is for sure. Other like super religious things don't sit as well with my soul because I don't think they're the same.
Yeah.
But that's how I feel.
Yeah. I'm never shocked to hear people who come from a religious background because theater feels very religious to me in the sense that we are gathering in a space together and we are sharing a moment in time and we're all just like present in this thing. And we go on this journey and sometimes it involves music, sometimes it doesn't, but it feels, I grew up Jewish, but I never connected to the faith. Like I'm connected to the traditions and the culture and my heritage. But when, for me, like that, the theater was church for me, you know, it was a place to like gather and meet people. And that's like how I should say one of the ways that I experience what, you know, whatever the word you want to use, the universe, God, like when I'm in that space and I hear Vicky Clark singing Piazza, like that's when I experience God, right? I'm like, oh, the wholeness of what life has. All of the, like that goosebump feeling, you know what I'm talking, you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I'm somebody that, you know, since I was so little and singing in front of church and people used to say to me, you're anointed and this is, you know, God has a calling on your life and this is what you're meant to be doing. And maybe some would have hoped it would have been like in Christian music or something. I still feel like I said, I do have faith. I feel like I do have a calling on my life. And, but there are so many kinds and that being in theater is a way, like you just said, how you experience it is, that and how I hope people experience me as a person. That kindness and empathy, is how I try to operate my life. I'm clearly no saint and I make a lot of mistakes.
We're human beings, right?
I have my own feelings about certain things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I try to, be a person that, does good in the world. And I do think our little show and, does do a lot of good for people's hearts and souls right now. After going through this pandemic that we've gone through and we're continuing to go through, bringing a little light and a little perspective is a beautiful thing. And, I still pray, that, what we do can help people in some way. And,
I've only found prayer in the last few years and it's been super transformative for me. Taking an opportunity to like hand over control, at least for a moment, in the form of prayer has been revelatory in this process of the reality of being an artist. Because so much of what we do is out of our control, or I should say often so many of the opportunities are out of our control, right? There's so many things that we don't have control over, right? Like obviously we don't know what jobs we're going to get. We certainly don't know how it's going to be received. We don't know what other people in the room are going to feel. We don't know about the company that we're going to be with. And to be able to accept the things, you know, that I cannot control, yeah. that I cannot change,
yeah.
And have the courage to change the things that I can, has been profound in yes. my artistic journey. That faith piece that I never had before.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if that's something that's been like helpful for you or,
It absolutely has. I think, oh gosh, you feel like you lose so many things, you know, you hear so many no's. I just saw Lee Silverman the other night, actually at the Stage Directors and Choreographers Foundation, a fundraising event. And her and I were working up at Mass Mocha Sundance in, I think, November of 2019. And I had turned down a couple of things in order to say yes to a project I was told they needed me for, and it was going to be great, and it was going to Broadway. And then I had to drop out of something else to do that. And it was advised by everybody. And then I felt bad about that, but it was like, this is the right choice. This is the right choice. And then, I was feeling so bad about that. And then I thought, by the way, later I did that workshop and it went great. And then they ended up later replacing me.
Don't you love where that, again, things we can't control.
It's like, ah. So I was at a point where I was like, should I have taken those other contracts because they were there? But something in my heart was like, that's not for me. And I thought I was holding out for the right stuff and then nothing worked out. And now I have no prospects and I think I'm doing everything wrong. And I sat there, we were on a lunch break and she came over to the table, I think just to be sweet, and was like, how are you? And I just started crying. And I said, I think I'm doing everything wrong. And she was like, what? Like, you know, it's like the last thing she thought was going to happen. And I kind of filled her in on stuff. And I was like, maybe I should just take these other projects, but I just don't think, and this and that. And now it was the end of 2019, and Head Over Heels had been so joyful, but then, you know, our audiences weren't that big.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to do some certain things for me that it did in many ways and didn't in others. And I was left sort of part of me feeling back to square one and the other part realizing that's a lie. But you know, you have that little devil on your shoulder saying, no, you're back to one. Nobody cares. And I was so just like, I've done everything wrong. And she just was like, there is no right way to do this. And you don't do that to yourself. And you're amazing. And what will happen will happen. And I remember having that. And I talked to her about that recently, because then, you know, by February, that project I had dropped things out of to do, let go of me. And then all the other projects I had said no to or got kicked out of started rehearsals. And then the shutdown happened. And while all those things were in rehearsal is when my dad was dying. And I was able to go back to the Midwest. Otherwise, I would have been in rehearsal. And been like, I don't know if when I can make it. And we got to say the things that had to be said and be with each other, commune, like just have this really hard, hard time and love and, you know, long talks and acts of forgiveness and lots of things that were really beautiful and transformative. And then next thing I know, I get a call to self-tape for something called Kimberly Akimbo. And it was like, because none of that other stuff happened, yeah. I was with my dad and I'm now in this show. That is like such a channel for grief and forgiveness and, sorry.
No, I'm losing it over here. So we're in it together.
And in other ways. And I remember saying to my agent, because they asked for my tape a couple days after my dad died, and I said I can't. You know, my dad. And they asked for it again a couple weeks after that. And I tried and I just couldn't memorize because my brain was so cloudy with grief. And I remember saying, can you call me? I don't think I can make a tape because they gave me 2 extra weeks. And if I'm going to give them a bad tape. And if I give them a bad tape with 2 extra weeks, they're going to think I've lost it or I'm bad. I was like, I think it will be more detrimental to me if I make something right now than if I don't make anything at all. And if this is meant to be, it will come back to me. And that was the scariest thing because I wanted so desperately to work with those people.
Of course.
And I loved the play. And I just thought, oh, I hope this works out. But right now in my life, I can't do this. And the team said, sure, give her a couple more weeks. And then I got it. And then here I am. And it's like, and let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4 of these other projects I'm talking about are happening within the next year. And I'm where I'm meant to be.
And you feel that.
I feel so, that feels like God to me. That feels like trusting that what's meant to be will be. And in this business, sometimes that's so hard because it's so unsure. And a lot of times things don't work out and you have to hold on to believing you have something worth saying. And there is a reason for me being on a stage, and the way I look and the way I sound and the way I act means something to different people. And I would hope that it can be changing for others and moving for others in some way, in the way that you talked about.
I mean, what a story that is, you know? And again, I think it's important to reiterate the point you said that, like, in it, right? In the thick of it, it's hard and heavy and confusing. And only in retrospect, right? Like now, 2.5 years later, looking back at this whole experience, you're like, oh my God, that was God. Like, there's no other way to explain this series of events that now feels like, oh, this was exactly what was supposed to happen.
Yes. I wouldn't have been available for this. And the way that this show has been such a gift to me in so many ways is immeasurable on my life and my heart and my own grief and my soul and all these things. So I'm just so thankful.
It's beautiful and such a good, I think such a good reminder that it's, you just don't know. We just don't know. We just don't know how things are going to play out. And every time, and I imagine, I'm guessing, I don't know if this is true for you, but you come up against that sort of like wall of nothingness. There's it's just darkness. There's nothing. There's like you said, no prospects. I have no projects coming up, you know, maybe a reading or a concert or something, but pretty much it's just kind of emptiness.
Yeah.
Like settling into faith in that space is really, is really, really challenging.
Yes. Very.
But you know, it's like, what else can you do other than, you know what I mean? Other than just like surrender to the waves of the thing. Because the resistance is like, I have found the resistance is like poison for me. Like if I start to spiral and start to have those sort of like devil on the shoulder thoughts, which are going to come, right? I can't control my thoughts, but how I respond and how I react, that's on me. And I can certainly make myself physically ill. With
the
fear and the questions and the confusion. But I also have the power to like pray, for example, or fill up my life with things that make me feel whole, that make me feel God, that make me feel joy, make me feel love. And that's one of the things I've when I say, when people are like coming out of school, or I always just say, like, make yourself a life that you love, you know, like find a community in New York, or wherever you're going, build yourself a life, because that's going to be the foundation that all the other things can happen on top of. But without that foundation, when you're just like hanging on to job to job to job to job, and then there's nothing.
Yeah.
It's abyss.
That's also part of the grounding of it all. You know, when you talked about confidence and staying humble, keeping people around you who aren't there just because you can sing high or Ooh. Just because you're funny. People, I am still such close friends with college friends of mine. And my dearest friends, some are in the business, but not all. And they just know me. And that keeps me grounded, and my family. And when it feels, you know, I have some certain actor friends I can spiral out to on that because they understand via text and be like, oh dear God, Matt Doyle, number one, he and I can talk to each other. Like, I'm freaking out. Can you talk me down?
Yeah, you guys have been
We've been through it first since 2014 when we met. Like, it's, we've really seen a lot of highs and lows for each other. So it's like, I know I can turn to him and be like, either can you just hear me and not say anything, or can you give me perspective, you know, and he does the same with me. But just having people who know you, who know your heart, who know things years ago. And now I truly try to stay away from reviews. And also if I'm tagged in videos online, I have made the mistake of reading a comment, and then you go down a spiral of reading comments, and there's always going to be haters. And then I feel the worst, and I cry and cry and cry. And it's just like, what am I doing? That means nothing. You don't know these people, and it's okay. People
and these people don't know you.
They don't know me. And we all have different opinions. I could hate something you love and vice versa. Doesn't make anybody wrong. It, like being a bully online does, but trying not to take that in and stay grounded as a human being and not making my worth my performance or my career. Like, my worth is who I am as a human, how I treat people. And that has to be like the core of who I am, and to remember that. And that's what keeps humble and kindness there, is surrounding yourself with people who aren't there to just fluff your ego. I don't need that. I don't need you to tell me any of that. It's nice here and there.
Thanks so much.
Like, I'd rather hear I'm a good friend than that. So that's a big part of it.
So watching Matt go through what he went through this past year.
Yeah.
What was that like as a friend? Like, cause you've seen each other, like, you know, started from the bottom, now we hear, like,
yeah. I mean, the most pride I can think of, I of course had COVID and was stuck in Mexico they announced Tony nominations.
Oh my God.
So I have a video, you can see it on my Instagram, when I did the post of when he got nominated. And the last video is me. The sound is of a Jurassic Park creature. I don't even know the squeal that came forth from me with my COVID riddled throat, but I, you know, set an alarm so I could watch it live on my computer from Mexico. And he was already texting me, and I was like, babe, I've got my setup waiting. I'm ready to watch. And he's like, I'm so worried. I'm so nervous. You know? And I was like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. This is about to be great. And then we immediately FaceTimed, and I was,
yeah, of course.
Sobbing, and I'm going to cry again, because he's worked so, so hard, and I've seen him do everything, from readings to, you know, show at New World Stages, the Clockwork Orange play he did, Carnegie Hall, to everything. That I know how hard he has worked. And how, for a couple of years it was rough, and to like the feeling of trying to feel, validated and seen again in the business at a time when he kind of felt, like, will this happen for me again? And I just miss it. And, really choosing projects that would grow, make him grow as a performer, as an actor, that and turning certain things down. And that was really amazing to watch him make brave choices and be scared for a while, and then get this thing that was so right. And he was so brilliant in it. And then to have that happen to him and watch it was just unreal. He worked so hard, and I watched, he was so tired, and all of the work he did during that entire season was unbelievable. And so to see one of my closest, dearest friends, I just, my heart couldn't grow any bigger when that happened. And he's already been just, he's so beautiful and supportive in the way he's like, will text and check on me. He's like, I know this week must've been a heavy week. How you doing? Like, God, you're, you know, and he was there at first preview and he's just,
wow.
One of the best. I love him dearly.
It's, hearing you say all that, and I think you probably have experience with this too. What I'm hearing is like, you know, it's like building up something I work on therapy, building up the internal validation.
Yeah.
Right? Because the external is so out of our control.
Oh my God, yes. And changes constantly.
Literally nonstop. That's the only constant is the change. Building up the internal validation, right? And that takes years, right? Especially in this world. Not for everybody, but for a lot of people, it takes a long time to build up that internal validation that you can walk around and say, no, I know what I'm worth. And whether I get this job or not, like, I'm still going to be okay. And like, I'm still a good person. And then to have the external meet that internal validation is it in my head, it's like fireworks because what's happening is we've taken the value off of the external doesn't, it doesn't define our worth. It doesn't define our value. It's not as, we're not like hanging on to it. We're not gripping, but when it comes and it meets that internal, that kind of chemistry that happens is like, it's magic. And I'm sure you've had that experience in some way or another, obviously not winning a Tony, but having that sort of like being met with where you are internally.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. Absolutely. It's so powerful to see it happen for a friend. And then the things like even, you know, last year with Kimberly Akimbo, the way we were received off Broadway, I think because it was such a specific post-pandemic, we just get to be in a room. Oh my gosh, I love all these people. I was so in the moment of what we were actually doing that it's almost like for the first time, I didn't care what the critics were going to say. It was just what we were doing and building, and people around us felt so assured of what we were doing that sometimes that external stress of the validation of others can really creep into the room early for the creatives, for the cat, like for everybody. And somehow, and I think it was just because we were all so grateful to be working again. And so it was this amazing revelation that the world said, we love you. And I was like, what? Oh my gosh, I love us too. Wait, you do? Because, you know, I loved Head Over Heels so much and I worked on that for so many years. And there were so many people that loved it and a lot of reviews that loved it and then some reviews that didn't. And you saw those. And it was heartbreaking to have put so much into something and then to come out to a house, you know, that first pose was you watch the audience and it would be like 40% full and you know, you're going to close soon. And we had producers that kept us open a lot longer than probably financially they should have, but they believed in us. So we got to run a good with previews 6.5 months, which is amazing.
Wow.
But it felt like an uphill battle because it was just like, we were getting external validation, but then also the other kind that's like, you're not good.
Right.
And it was so hard to battle constantly something I believed in and loved so dearly to have that. And then this feels like, so it's such a different feeling because I went into it with no, like I had so much expectation and it was my debut. So I was really like,
you're talking about Head Over Heels. You went in with,
breaking that glass bubble of what your dreams are and what it's going to be and feeling reality. And this was just like feeling the dream of getting to work again. And then all of a sudden everybody loves it. And again, I don't read all the comments. I don't search boards. I don't search tweets. I stay away from it.
Are you a masochist? Like, oh my God, no.
I know some people that do, and I don't want to do that to
myself.
You're
asking for trouble. You're asking for trouble
because people just want to do that.
Yeah.
And to feel such overwhelming love immediately for something I really love has been nothing but joy. And so I am doing my best to hold on to that as we go into this opening next week and reviews that will come out, to just say, let's stay grateful for getting to tell this story, not only in a pandemic world, but after everything that has happened in my life and the loss of my dad, like all these different things that I get to be on this stage. And like you said, like the gifts that I have, that I bring, are gifts I got from him. And so it's like, he does live on when I do this. And that's a beautiful thing. And just trying to feel grateful for that.
Yeah, it's almost like when we're present, when we're like really present and we forget about everything else, like that's when the stuff comes in. There's no guarantees, but it's like that only really happens when we're so present.
Yes.
And in a weird way, when we're not present and those things come, it like kind of perpetuates, it doesn't help. It like, it's actually not healthy. It like, you know what I mean? It gives us like a false expectation. But to hear you say, you know, just being so present in putting the piece together and being like, I'm really enjoying this process of just being in the room and then having people see it and be like, we love this. And you're like, oh my God, we love it too. Like,
well, cause we joke, you know, like, I don't know if I drank the Kool-Aid, but is it good? Cause you're like, you know, when you're a part of anything, hopefully you fall in love with it and hopefully you believe in what you're doing. I mean, sometimes we know when we do stuff that you're like, but you know, I'm going to have fun.
Yeah. But I'm like, going to enjoy myself.
I'm just going to have fun and I'm still going to give it my all.
Yep.
But I understand the story doesn't make sense. But this is opposite. This is like, wait, you do love it? Oh my God, me too. Oh, look at us. We're all here together.
Look at us loving this thing together.
Exactly.
It's so exciting. And I think, again, like I want to like be clear that like, I think this is such a cool moment to be talking to you because it's before we know like what like you right now, like it's all just like ahead of you, you know? Like who knows what the rest of this could be, what the story of this will be. But at least right now, to hear you be where you're at and not worrying about any of that and just
truly
like in this moment is so, it's so refreshing and it's so beautiful. And I'm so excited and I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
I feel the same, just like excited and happy. And I was telling somebody, I'm like, again, like I told you with Vicky and I at the end of first preview, just breaking down into sobs because we're so proud of all these Broadway debuts, that there, I think there's something really special. It's only my second one, but like to be a part of their journey forever feels unbelievable. I think there's also something in there that it's like, that's like the history of theater I get to be a part of. You know, they have the legacy robe, but it's like, again, it's only my second go around, but I now feel like a different part of the community, if that makes sense. Like,
it's
like even further, deeper seeped in, and keeping my focus on that joy and gratitude is my plan. And
that's a good plan.
I mean, text me in a few months,
right?
But like right now, no, I'm joking. Right now, that's really the plan because I feel nothing but gratitude and joy. Truly, I mean, exhaustion, but mostly gratitude. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheatre.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org. Because only together we rise.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.